support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
Welcome to Friday. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. Should we reintroduce grizzly bears to Costco and the Boeing boardroom and the Mariners locker room? We might get to that later this hour. We talk about what happened this week and what it means, and my panel this week includes the host of LiveWire Radio, Luke Burbank. You are at Town Hall Seattle this evening, 7:30.
And as if me being there wasn't enough, the producers told me it wasn't enough.
Okay.
So we decided to invite some guests. So we've got Dulce Sloan from The Daily Show there. Annie Rowerda, who runs this great site, The Depths of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Just identifying some of the more bizarre facts and things that you might find on Wikipedia. We've got music from Dessa, who's this great musician. And anyway, it's going to be a great night at Town Hall tonight. Hopefully we can see a few people out there.
All right. Tonight, meaning Friday, if you're listening live. And also on our panel, we have from The Needling, welcome back, editor Lex Vaughn.
Good to be back.
Good to see you again. And from Washington Policy Center, communications director there. Welcome, David Bowes.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be
here.
I haven't
seen you in a while. Nice to see you again.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
We're getting the gang back together. David and I worked at various radio projects here in the Seattle area.
My first day of radio was with Luke Burbank.
Mm-hmm.
And your last day.
Before we get to local news, I guess it is anytime a bridge collapses over water, even if it's 3,000 miles away, some part of me is just picturing the Columbia River or the Tacoma Narrows or Deception Pass with maybe a little I-90 floating bridge collapse trauma thrown in from the 90s. Anyway, you know about the giant cargo ship hitting and bringing down this bridge in Baltimore, and you had it sounds like, David, maybe you had a similar reaction. It's just like how are our bridges here?
Well, the first thing I thought of was way back in the day. Remember when John Carlson was running for governor against Gary Locke, and there was a controversy because I forget, they were talking about a gas tax or something. But the thing that was brought up was that our bridges are in a state of disrepair in Washington State and have been for a long time. And it's not changed since that time. And, you know, that seems like yesterday to me, but it's been a couple of decades now. And everything is in worse shape now, even though, you know, we're a high tech state. We've got a lot of surpluses over the past 10 years. And those roads and bridges are in bad shape. And what those in charge of these things were saying is that there are structural problems to some of these bridges. Mm. And, of course, we've also had talks about we need to prepare for earthquakes and emergencies, which the Puget Sound is also due for.
So, I just want to state the obvious to anyone listening who's saying, you know that it was a huge cargo ship in Baltimore, right?
Yeah.
It's very different.
Totally
but
different. Different, but we haven't prepared for these other things where there's this, you know, there's been an acknowledgement that there's this big problem with our infrastructure for over 25 years. And at some point, something bad will happen and people will say, you know, I didn't even see it coming.
Well, I mean, some bad things have already happened and we've just gotten lucky. When I was at the Seattle Times, I actually reported on the Skagit Bridge collapse, ran up there. And the whole time I was driving up there, I was worried about what I was going to end up reporting on. And just very fortunately, only two vehicles went into the river.
This is when a truck hit the bridge.
Well, it was so like frightening how fragile this bridge was.
Yeah.
Like a truck had just caught on a part of the bridge and the whole thing fell into a river.
It's like a Jenga, you know?
Yeah, and it's just like, wow, that's all it takes.
I lived in Bellingham at the time, and my daughter and my brother were on their way up to see me in Bellingham and missed that event. It happened about 5 minutes in front of them.
Yeah.
And I mean, ultimately, the bridge stayed intact, so I guess it wasn't the end of the world. But to just feel like someone you know and love was 5 minutes from being on a bridge that was possibly going to be destroyed or something. Like, it really brings to mind, like Dave was saying, the infrastructure stuff. Because this is I think they might call this a sort of exogenous event that happened in Baltimore. It's like not going to be that typical that a huge ship this size loses its power and crashes into a sort of part of the bridge that isn't maybe properly protected. But there are these much less interesting events of just corrosion and rust and like little things that are not going to get into the news, but that are maybe, according to some experts, a larger threat.
Yeah, it didn't even take something the size of the Empire State Building, you know, to make a pothole the size of a V-Dub bus on the West Seattle Bridge recently, you know.
Yeah.
You look at that, and you first think pothole, and then you can see all the way down, and you're thinking, you know, what if a motorcycle had been going through at that time?
It was cartoonish how big that hole is.
It was, yeah. It's like Wile E. Coyote territory there.
Yeah,
crazy.
Right. Okay, well, they're, you know, Baltimore is dealing with a lot, just the whole city, the whole, the industry,
imagine.
The economy there, the port shut down.
I think what adds to the, I'm not actually even joking, I think what adds to it is it's called the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
I mean, yeah.
It feels like an assault on America.
It's like, I think this
it's not
is
some name we haven't heard
something.
Of. It's not like, you know, the ARCO, you know, Illuminaire Center Bridge. Like, they haven't sponsored it by a corporation. It's like Francis Scott Key. It just feels like some part of the core idea of America was taken down this week.
It feels like the universe is trying to tell us something
about
taking our bridge safety and strength more seriously.
Speaking of institutions that we hold dear and have a lot of pride in, how does the CEO of the Boeing company feel this week? He announced his retirement and the company's stock went up, and KOW listeners heard analysis like this.
You know, I think this is the first good news the company's had in quite some time.
I think people are gratified that something is happening. It's kind of a famous question. What does it take to get fired around here, you know, if you're an executive? And finally we know.
Pretty much every move he did was a complete mystery.
It's also a preview of my KOW retirement party.
Oh. Yeah, I've seen the performance reviews. Yeah. I mean, if you were the manager of a sports team in Seattle— you had the same results that Boeing seems to have had over the last however many years, it would be very likely that they'd be looking for somebody else. I mean, I was surprised to find out how durable some of these executives are, because it just seems like it's a high-pressure job. There's a lot of money on the line. There's a lot of safety to the people flying in these planes. And, like, it just – apparently, if you are the CEO in these places, you can hang on for a decent amount of time amidst a lot of bad news. And I'm surprised this is what it finally took.
Mm. I mean, before this CEO started, we had a headline about the last CEO exiting with a literal golden parachute.
Which they are now handing out on the last
day. Yeah,
they have
them
on the exit rows.
Yeah,
now.
And I mean, that guy, his record was even more egregious because hundreds of people did die while he was a CEO. So it's like, it feels like something productive, but I mean, there needs to be a lot more accountability happening at that company.
You know, what's weird to me, though, is it's not immediate. Like, I feel like if you did something awful on the air, Bill, your retirement party would probably be a lot earlier, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they'd be like, well, you know, here's your stuff. You throw it in the parking lot, you're out. You know, here we have this situation where there's all these safety problems that, you know, apparently there's red flags going up among the people in the know. And they're just kind of going along until doors are falling off planes in midair, you know, and people are dying. I am confused as to how people can not only keep their job as long as they have, but also when they're fired, kind of, I'm fired, but it's in December, and, you know, the retirement party will be done. Stock's going up.
I want to give him some time to really kind of get his feet under him.
I wanted to make the announcement now because my stock options are going up, and that way when I retire, I'll get more. It's weird.
Yeah, maybe they didn't want to, you know, announce how much his, you know, exit package is on top of everything else going on right now.
Yeah. The journalist and analyst Bill Saporito said that Boeing's new CEO, whoever that is, maybe ought to move to Washington State.
I think it would be a great kind of gesture to move back to Washington where it all began and to say, I'm going to live where the problem is right now. And even if they don't move the corporation back, the next CEO should set up shop in Seattle and say, I'm not moving until we get this straightened out.
So Boeing is headquartered in Northern Virginia. Do you think the CEO would live here until when? Until the investigation's complete? Until there are zero maintenance problems?
I think the next CEO would live here and do what managers do, which is then say, all right, everybody else, you know, you're coming into town.
Yeah,
right. You
know, like they do in Bentonville, Arkansas with Walmart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've got to, if you're one of the major companies, you've got to also have somebody there because we need to be able to talk to you when we need to talk to you.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I remember, Bill, I worked here with you here at KOW when Boeing announced it was going to Chicago. And this was, I think, helped create one of the greatest comedy moments in KOW history, which was, I think, on Rewind.
Yeah.
there was a joke that was the CEOs or the people in charge of Boeing said they needed to move to Chicago so they could be more centrally located to mm-hmm. their customers. And we said, if only someone built a mechanical bird that could soar through the sky to get them, you know, like the idea that the Boeing CEOs and then the brain trust need to be some particular geographic place is just comical. I mean, it would mean a lot, I think, to people in the Northwest to come back home.
He may not want to fly Boeing right now.
Right.
You know,
right.
He might want to wait until does his safety check.
I think that psychologically, though, maybe this is just as
that was before Zoom, by the way, when that
right.
whole
it, right, exactly. It's even less important now necessarily where you are in terms of getting to your clients. But I just think as a person who grew up in Seattle and the pride that was felt about Boeing here, and I know there's still a lot of people working really hard for mm-hmm. Boeing.
My wife, as I always disclose, my dad, I lived in Federal Way. Everybody I knew, that's a slight exaggeration. My best friend's dad was at Boeing, et cetera.
It seems like it would just be a real, I don't want to say culture change, because that indicates that the culture of Boeing, as far as the rank and file, is has problems. And I don't even know if it gets down to the people doing the work. But as far as the people in charge saying, this area means something to us, the quality of these aircrafts means something to us, something simple like living in a $12 million house in Medina, I feel like that's a sacrifice that the CEO should be willing to make.
I know. I'm like, why don't they want to live here, honestly? Like, what are you doing in Virginia, South Carolina? Right. This is, like, obviously better.
Yeah, and you touch on the cultural significance to the Northwest. I think that is retained, and the workers here do feel this pride. And there's, you know, when I saw the news that Boeing was falling apart, it really – it kind of adds to this sense of malaise in the area, you know, like, oh, come on, because you're rooting for Boeing. I mean, it's just this quintessential Washington State plus American company. I know it's been elsewhere.
Unless you don't like their arms trading, you might be rooting for Boeing.
Well,
yeah. But I mean, it's like it would be so smart for a number of reasons for them to reinvest some presence back here in the Seattle area. But it would probably require an amount of humility they don't have, because it would be admitting that they've made such a long series of mistakes moving out of this area and not valuing the workforce that made Boeing what it is today. I would love for that to happen. I just can't bet on it, you know?
I do, on DraftKings. actually, a lot riding on it, so come through, Boeing.
David Calhoun, the exiting CEO, but at the end of the year exiting CEO, told employees this week that the Alaska Airlines door panel blowout in January was a, quote, watershed moment for the company. Although technically that plane wasn't allowed to fly over a watershed because of the warning lights that had already gone off previously. The head of Boeing Commercial is leaving. The chairman of the board is leaving. I did wonder what the Washington Policy Center, you know, I think of you as a, among other things, a pro-business sort of organization, generally less regulation. And I hear there's this conversation about does Boeing need to be more regulated, less regulated? Does Washington Policy Center have any sort of reaction to that regulation question around our jewel, our beloved Boeing?
I haven't seen any official position come out, but it seems to me that there's a number of regulations already in place. I mean, there was some safety things that were not done and that needed to be done. So, you know, you could add another layer, but is it going to do any, you know, you can make something else also wrong, you know, or triply wrong. But if nobody's following through on what's already there, then your
how about regulatory
still not
enforcement?
Solved.
What about more oversight, more enforcement of the existing rules?
That's funny.
Well,
I mean, that there's supposed to be some enforcement right now. I mean, here we are. You know, how long and people are finally stepping back. But I think you've got lots of different things where people are supposed to act in a certain way, and they don't. And you can add this idea that, you know, there's kind of a cultural thing where government steps in and they're to the rescue and they're super efficient and everything's all fixed. But, you know, what's going to fix Boeing probably is the fact that people are now leery of flying Boeing planes.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You've got airline customers saying, I have a lot of orders for this, and now all of a sudden people don't want to fly. That's what's going to fix Boeing right now, not government coming along, government inspectors that are already inspecting Boeing, you know, 6 weeks from Sunday. Mm-hmm. So what's going to fix Boeing is the bottom line is under threat, and people are going to have to fix it, and the new CEO, whoever that might be, is going to know they got to fix it.
And someday maybe more choices besides just Airbus and Boeing, but that's the future.
That was the thing that I...
Elon agrees with you.
Realized in looking into this a little bit, which is I think because of the timeline of these projects and delivering these aircraft and also just like how hard it is to have the infrastructure and the supply chain as a company to make these, once you're one of the dominant companies, once you're Boeing or Airbus, you're sort of one of only a few games in town. Mm-hmm. And you can get away with a lot of like not super great delivery on promises, et cetera, because I used to always say my frustration with the airlines is as a passenger, when they just say, well, we're not going there, you have no recourse because they have the planes. Right. It's asymmetric mm-hmm. between the passenger. And in a way, as the airlines to the airline producers, it's also somewhat asymmetric. They might be able to go to Airbus or someone else, but pretty much there's a couple of major players. And I can't see that that's helping things.
Oh. Yeah.
Lex, before we take a break, how did the needling cover the story?
We had Boeing has given us like so much material this year. Like we've gotten like so many headlines that we've basically published something about
this
Boeing every week.
We should tell you this is a satirical site for those
yes.
who don't know the
so
needling.
So the needling is a local satire for Seattle's only real fake news. And this last week we had a headline, Boeing stock rebounds after front half of 737 MAX lands safely.
Yes.
Had fun with the image as well.
Indeed.
Check it out.
Indeed. Check it out. That's Lex Vaughn with the needling. And we've got Luke Burbank here from LiveWire Radio and from Too Beautiful to Live. Mm-hmm. We've got David Bowes here from Washington Policy Center. We're going to take a short break. We've got more to say about what happened this week. We'll be right back at it in just a moment.
Support comes from Pacific Science Center, working to inspire the next generation of scientists and increase access to STEM education statewide through digital discovery workshops, science on wheels, and summer camps. More ways to support these efforts at pacsci.org. Support comes from the Discovery Inn on Washington's San Juan Island, an island getaway that's a ferry ride away, now taking reservations for summer and fall. More information and booking available at discoveryinn.com.
You are listening to KUOW's Week in Review. You might be watching the show because we're up on YouTube. Just search KUOW Public Radio. We are covering the news of the week. I'm Bill Radke. As I said, we're here with Lex Vaughn, Luke Burbank, David Bowes. Time for the latest installment in our series, What Will This New Seattle Council Do Next? And we have two items this week. Number one, Seattle's new city council is considering reducing the minimum wage for food delivery drivers that the last city council put in place. Now, these delivery drivers don't have an hourly wage. They are independent contractors. The former city council guaranteed them a minimum amount per mile and per minute and per order. And the app companies like Uber Eats and DoorDash added a $5 per order service charge, supposedly to cover the costs imposed by Seattle. Well, that'll make your food more expensive. So orders dropped, tips went down. Some drivers say now that they're making less money than they were before. This week, a city council committee considered repealing the wage guarantees, but what sounds more likely is maybe reducing the guarantees and making the companies check every week and make sure the drivers are all told making the equivalent of minimum wage. Any reaction?
I think we just need to like keep, you know, focused on the fact that these people aren't even guaranteed an actual minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's so sad to see this movement to try to pit, you know, small businesses against people who are barely making it. I mean, if you're doing this kind of work, you're probably unemployed, you know, like really strapped for money.
And you could just dig the flexibility.
Nickel and dime them even more is just like ridiculous. I really hope that this effort to, you know, reduce their pay back to something ridiculous that is, you know, even farther away from minimum wage doesn't, you know, succeed. We really got to like not let these multi-billion-dollar companies successfully convince us that the enemy is like these low income workers who don't even make minimum wage doing this work. They don't, no matter what they say.
I've known people in the gig economy that, you know, took up the job because it was a second job. They did it at night when their kids went to bed so that they could make extra money delivering food. And then they shopped around to different apps. If they didn't make enough in one app, moving people, or they didn't like, you know, some of the risks involved and they didn't think it was worth the money, they went to food and they made more money. And they just made the decision themselves. I look at this and think, you know, it's as you point out, there's a number of people in this economy that were saying, hey, we're making less money now than we were before. And the hope here was that government was going to step in. They're going to make this minimum. We're going to get this money and we would be better off. And it's not happening. I view this as more like let the people decide what's best for them. And if they're making enough money to justify doing it, and that gives them the freedom to make what they need to do in the flexible way that they need to do it. And if just one of these places is saying, hey, the rest are not paying anybody hardly anything, but this other app is paying people well, then everybody will move to that app. You know, the best people and the best drivers and the most reliable people will be moving to there. So I think there's enough room for flexibility in this, and it's the kind of complicated arrangement that government's not really well suited to get involved with.
I think that there's a real range of the people that do gig economy stuff. I was in Palm Springs last week, and I was being driven to the hotel by a retired guy who said he had moved there from San Diego with his wife. They had sold their home for $3 million in Del Mar, and that he liked this because it got him out of the house, and it was – he called it tip money when they go on their vacations. So that would be one end of the gig economy.
Yes.
And then you go to a place like New York City, and the people delivering the food, primarily in New York City, are people that don't speak English as a first language, mm-hmm. that are at the absolute lowest end of the economic spectrum, who often don't have a bank account or an identity to even receive the money from the companies they're working for. There are people who sublease out their bank accounts and ID.
Wow.
If you think about how far down the food chain it can go, there are people that are making a fraction of what they're getting for delivering food in New York City because they're paying up to someone who has the ID.
Right.
So those, to me, feel like people that we should be looking out for and trying to create some floor if we can, because the downward pressure on this is extreme. I know what you're saying, David. Like, ideally, people will go towards the thing that pays them better, but also everybody needs some money, even if it's not enough. And if it's up to the companies to try to make a good deal for their employees, it just – particularly these companies like DoorDash and stuff. The other thing I'll say is, like, my sister and my brother-in-law own a restaurant in Portland, and they tried for the longest time to hold out on offering their food via these delivery services because it is not good for the restaurant. They make almost nothing. Most of their employees are boxing up food.
Yeah.
And putting it on a shelf so someone can take it. Like, is this the world we want to live in?
These companies are extremely exploitative of the small businesses, like these restaurants, the customers, and the delivery drivers. And we got to just, like, see that for what it is. These people can afford to pay people something that is minimum wage. A lot of the CEOs of these companies, you know, were literally making $500 million a year.
As the companies lose money on paper, by the way, like, I don't even, is DoorDash even profitable?
Most of these, even Uber wasn't profitable. Right. Until, I think they have, 1 year or 2 years of profitability. I mean, it's, but the value, the paper value is all in what they expect in the future. And it's not the current
value.
What
is this, Truth Social?
What you reminded me of.
Nice.
what you reminded me of there was I did take a ride one time with a guy who I think he was a doctor, but I don't remember if it was medical or dental or a professor of some sort. But anyway, it just reminded me that there's other rules like occupational licensing that government set in there to, you know, all it does is it protects the people that are already there, that are already doing the jobs, and that there's perfectly qualified people that could pass competency tests or could show that they were competent in other states or even other countries, but they can't get through without spending thousands of dollars because even like I forget what the exact name is, but it's basically hairdressing. You know, you've got 1,000 hours of required training in mm-hmm. Washington State to get your license. The Supreme Court of Washington State recently changed it so that lawyers don't have to take the bar. They can do this alternative, or they can have a lower set for that. They can have an apprenticeship program. They need to take a look at other occupational licenses and other things that keep people out of utilizing the best of their skills, who might be occupying a spot in that other economy that, you know, would be better suited to others.
Can I just say something that can just kind of put it in more simple terms? I like if we just rewind before a time where these apps were available.
That's the name of the show.
Yeah, yeah, that's what we do. Like it was a thing growing up to get like, you know, Domino's by delivery, right? Like you knew that that person was making minimum wage and that it was nice to, on top of that, give them a tip.
Yeah.
So I just you just cannot buy this narrative that there's just no way for these super well-funded companies to pay people minimum wage. Plus tips. Like, why not?
Yeah. I mean, I live my life like I don't use DoorDash or other apps because I don't like it. You know, I don't like getting my food cold. And if I'm going to spend money at a restaurant, I'd like to eat it. You know, I don't want to clean up my own dishes. But now that I have four kids, I feel like going to a restaurant is not a fun experience anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, well, that was torturous. But if I ever do get the chance to eat out, I just go in and pick up the food myself.
Yeah, so. I do too.
Well, we'll see what the city council decides. They're still mulling this. Chapter two of what will the new city council do next? Protesters. Last month, protesters came to a city council meeting, spoke for their officially allotted 20 minutes, and then security was told to clear the chamber. Some protesters refused to leave. Police gave them a 10-minute warning and then arrested six of them. Sometimes people are arrested, but no charges are filed. But the city attorney has decided to charge the six with first-degree criminal trespassing and one obstruction charge. Maximum punishment, 364 days in jail and or a $5,000 fine. City Councilor Tammy Morales objected. She's in the minority now, generally. And she said that charging protesters for dissenting in the People's Chamber is undemocratic.
What were they protesting? Because I need to decide if I think they should go to jail or not.
And it should be based on whether you like the content of the protest.
Well, like somebody shows up at like a school board meeting somewhere to say stop with the woke books. Let's get rid of those people. But if they're there to, you know, argue for what I consider the side of justice, let's just try to take a light hand with it.
My point is the system works.
My point is the way that we feel about free speech, I think, is very much affected by the free speech that's being put into play.
Yeah, there used to be a stronger commitment to free speech, you know, defend to the death
your
right to say it, right? Yeah. Even if I disagree with you, especially if I disagree with you, that's when free speech. But there has been kind of the switcheroo where it's like, oh, they're against the woke books. Shut them down. Oh, that's a lefty on the protest in Seattle Council. Throw them in the jail.
Right.
In this case, I actually read what they were protesting, but now I can't remember.
They want the city to do more to help asylum
seekers in a different town
outside the city.
Yeah.
There is some Seattle involvement. It's not completely a bright line, but yes, it's mostly in elsewhere in King County.
Yeah,
It's like in any case, like you could say okay, it depends on what. Like, would you have the same attitude if they weren't fighting for human rights or something about, you know, continuing to bang on windows and be heard after the public comment period? But I think it's just sad to see city leaders, both at the council and the city attorney's office, being so ridiculously punitive to people who are speaking up for, you know, the most oppressed and vulnerable people in our society.
So the content does matter to you. You wouldn't
I mean, it's like, first of all, I think part of Seattle's identity has been, you know, it's a progressive city that is supposed to care about human rights. And to criminalize people for speaking up, you know, for people who need more support, it's just cruel. And then on top of that, I just think it wouldn't have taken that much for the city council to just hear these people out and respect what they were saying.
Right. But two slightly different issues because they weren't criminalized just for speaking up, but they enforced the 20-minute clock, which they didn't used to do, and they had some discretion there about how to handle it.
And I think, you know, everybody thinks that they're caring about other people. I don't think progressives have a corner on the market for caring for people. I think conservatives would definitely be saying the same thing. And then there's some social stats that indicate in person, they prove that. But in this case, government has to function. And if people are interrupting, there are some people who you could give them an hour, you keep them to the 20 minutes that's allotted, or you could give them an hour. And at the end of it, they're going to be banging on windows and protesting because they want the attention, they want the spectacle.
Well,
I'm not saying that I don't know these people. I'm just saying that this is a possibility. And the council wants to send some kind of a message. Are they going to get a year in prison and all these fines? I doubt it. They're probably going to make some kind of a deal or something. There's a part of me that says, shut this down, get some order in the council. That I don't live in Seattle anymore, so it's not really, I don't have a skin in the game, so to speak. Although I do find it kind of funny that they're demanding all this time primarily for an issue that is outside of the city, and there's plenty of people inside the city that the council is actually hired to care for and to govern. But there's another part of me that feels like, I go grocery shopping. Three of the last four times, I've seen people just walk out with loads of stuff and not get prosecuted, and not get in trouble.
There's definitely bigger fish to fry.
But when people who have an elected position get inconvenienced, then suddenly the world is crumbling and there's an arrest made. And so, I feel like you got to start somewhere to get things into some kind of civility. I'm generally not in favor of throwing more time than is reasonable toward people just because they happen to have broken a law.
But I think Lex raises a good point as well, which is, and all of us have dealt with in interpersonal life with somebody who just needs to be heard. Mm. And a lot of times the answer is just like, listen to them.
Yeah.
Just like hold space for them. They'll foam it off. I'm not trying to diminish this issue, but I just mean, like, sometimes I go back and forth. I really don't like seeing people disrupting proceedings and making it impossible for us to do the business of, like, local government on whatever side of the spectrum politically they're on. But also, a lot of times people just want to feel heard, and there is sometimes an easier way to get through it, which is to just kind of think to yourself, this is annoying. We'll let them speak, and then we'll kind of move on. Sometimes that's the easiest way to get through the situation.
Well, it was very clear that there was another way to handle this, and the King County Council did, because the same group of people came to the King County Council, and there was a completely different...
Is that before or after?
After. Yeah. There was a completely different reception to it. The County Council members were overall just better at listening and validating and caring about what these people were saying, and it didn't get out of hand, and... I don't know. It's just really sad to see the Seattle City Council, the majority of them, just so ready to arrest people and punish people, like as if this is the biggest problem, that people are speaking up for others.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see what punishment they actually face. I'm curious whether protests will continue or whether there'll be because the majority on the council act like this is a reset for what behavior is expected of you, and then maybe everything goes much more orderly.
Well, there's going to be a challenge to the Seattle Council that's not at the King County Council, because Seattle Council has kind of switched from the ultra-progressive council, and it's got more of a – now it kind of shifted the pendulum a little bit. I guess we could call it – it's not right of center, but it's more conservative than Seattle's used to.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have the King County Council, which has remained, kind of static progressive. So I think for people who want to disrupt, the Seattle Council is the one you'd aim for. I mean, just they would be target number one.
All right. We'll see. That's chapter or whatever we're up to now on this new the new city council in town compared to the old one. We are going to talk Grizzlies, reintroducing Grizzlies, possibly to Costco. I don't know. That's when we come back. We'll take a short break and then more Week in Review. You're listening to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke, and we've got Lex Vaughn here from the Needling and Washington Policy Center's David Bowes, and Luke Burbank, who's bringing you Live Wire Radio tonight, Town
Yes.
Hall, Seattle.
Live and direct,
7:30.
Come on down. I don't think the weather's going to be nice tonight. Let's all get indoors. Let's all huddle around each other at Town Hall tonight at 7:30, please.
Get your tickets at kuow.org/events. Other news this week, should we reintroduce grizzlies to the North Cascades? The governor this week said yes, do it gradually. Some ranchers and hikers are opposed because of the livestock killing and the people mauling, and the feds could...
The people mauling.
Potentially. I would think that would be hikers and campers' number one concern, and the feds could decide this next month.
Yeah, it's I have to say at this moment, it's like I need more information. I need more.
That wasn't enough for you?
Well, you know, well, I do think they need to do a better job of informing us of what this is really going to look like, because it sounds terrifying to me. Mm. As someone who absolutely loves the North Cascades, it's like I'm conflicted, because it's like I know that it seems like it would be good for the environment for them to be reintroduced back. I just need more information about, like, is that really going to work out the way that they say it is?
Well, that I can't tell you. I can tell you that the idea is somewhere between 3 and 7 grizzlies per year over 5 to 10 years. That's a range. And the goal is to establish an initial population of 25, and hopefully they do more reproducing than the biting.
But it sounds like they could introduce up to like 70 in a decade. Something.
Well, that would be the north end of that.
Well, here's what's weird. Everyone keeps talking about it as a reintroduction of the grizzly bear, but there's been grizzly bear sighted in the North Cascades every so often forever. I mean,
last confirmed sighting nearly 30 years ago.
No,
yes,
that's not true.
Oh,
in 2011 there was a photograph.
I remember that.
In 2017 there was a photograph.
I want to mention David's Bonafides. He's the only person I know who actively hunted big game while driving a Geo Metro.
That's true.
Wow. As a true story, he would bring back large hunting trophies in his Geo Metro. The guy knows.
I got pulled over one time with a large deer in the back of the Geo, and the state patrol officer said, I just had to see it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right, I might be misinformed on confirmed grizzly
sightings.
But
you're not the only one. Most of the media sites all say, you know, well, the last sight was this, the last sight was that. I saw a picture in the Winthrop News way back in the day of these grizzly cubs. They had a picture of them back then. It's probably not even online because it's so old. But then the Seattle Times ran a story with a picture of a grizzly bear that was caught. I think that was the 2017. Then there was the 2011
one. Is the keyword confirmed because the federal...
No, because there's there's
feds
pictures.
Have to come in and...
There's pictures to a couple of these.
I believe you.
I'm about 90% sure I saw one outside of the Okanagan area because it had the super round ears. And, you know, when you hunt bears in Washington State, you have to take an identification test, the difference between a black bear and a grizzly bear, so that you can see the difference. And the reason for that is because we have grizzly bears in Washington State.
But do you want
we've
more?
Always had them.
Do you want more?
That's the real question there. And there's no barrier saying grizzlies can't come down if they wanted to. And you know, who's going to stop the grizzly bear if they want to do something? Not me. They're a huge apex predator. I think it's a bad idea. I think, you know, we've got a lot of people hiking, camping. It's a pretty active state. You know, they've got enormous territory run to the north of us, which is where they are. I don't have a lot of faith in how we've handled the wolf situation, which is we have, you know, an overabundance in northeastern Washington that has more than met its targeted goal. And yet, you know, ranchers and other people that actually live there are having all kinds of problems that most people in the urban areas don't care about because they don't relate to it and they don't understand it. Mm-hmm. But and I think grizzly bears have a similar kind of thing where it might seem like a good idea for some people that don't have to deal with it.
The argument that I saw, or the example, was that the reintroduction of wolves has reduced the elk population, which has increased the beaver population, mm-hmm. which has promoted the aspen growth. And I was just thinking, you know, seems like a good thing. But if one person is killed by a grizzly that we could trace back to reintroduction, I don't know how many aspen that adds up to. You know what I mean? Like, it's like I grew up near Green Lake. Yeah. If there were like primordial crocodiles in Green Lake, do we put them back in to rebalance the ecosystem? Like, there are just things where we're like, this is really dangerous. This is where people are. Also, the fact that it's the tribes in the area that are saying we have to live with these grizzlies and we don't feel great about it.
There's a mixed opinion among tribal members. Yes.
It seems like the kind of thing that if we lived in a perfect world and a perfect ecosystem, replacing, you know, reintroducing all of the levels of the sort of like, you know, predator scale or whatever would be great. But this just seems like the downside is pretty high if it goes wrong.
I hunted in a place we were flown in and dropped off in the middle of the North Idaho wilderness there.
I watched that reality show. you were good.
Well, I was the guy wheezing the most because I barely made it to that hike. But so we dropped off, and then you have to hike deep into the wilderness, middle of nowhere. There's just nobody around for miles and miles and miles. They had reintroduced the wolves, and in Idaho, and there's been a lot of wolves. There was nothing. I've never seen a place so desolate. I've never been to a place with fewer elk, fewer deer. I mean, I was with six experienced hunters walking miles every day. Mm. I saw one rabbit track and two deer that lived in the bottom of this gully in the midst of a bunch of brush, and that was it. And that place was all the other elk were apparently down toward the river on the bluffs trying to avoid the wolves. But
nature's way.
That was man's reintroduction. Man trying to control nature. So.
Okay. Right.
I have to admit, I have like a primal selfish like objection to it still that I have to work on. It, you know, maybe come around on, but it's like my favorite hiking trails are the North Cascades. And if there are grizzlies being introduced to it, I'm not doing it anymore.
I've done hiking trails where I've been out bear hunting, and people have walked by and saying, "Well, what are you doing?" Because obviously I've got a gun, so I like to make it very obvious I have a gun, so people aren't thinking danger. Mm-hmm. And I said, "I'm hunting bears," and they're like, "There's no bears out here," and I'm like, "What? You're in the North Cascades, and I literally had a dead bear next to me."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm just hauling this one out. I mean, don't be alarmed. It's dead.
Were you taking it to the metro?
It wasn't the metro. It might have been the metro. But anyway, no, I think I had a small Jeep that time. But in this case, the people walked by and they were hiking, enjoying themselves. And I saw them go they went about 50 yards, and then you saw them talking. Then they were running past. They're like, We're not hiking where the bears are. Just couldn't handle the idea. But there's cougars and bears all over the Cascades. Most of the time, they'll leave you alone. But having a predator like a grizzly bear is unlike any other. I mean, that is just one huge animal.
It's like we all have a certain setting where it's like, I can deal with the idea of cougars because, I've done the math in my head. I'm like, I think I'm fine if I just do this or that. It's like you have to recalibrate your risk.
I think cyclists are in more trouble for cougars because you're leaning over and the shape is more like a running deer or a gazelle.
Fun to chase. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, we'll see what the feds decide. That decision could finally come as soon as next month. Next topic on KOW's Week in Review is that Costco is considering using grizzly bears to stop non-members from eating their hot dogs. I actually didn't know you could eat at the Costco food court without being...
It sounds like it's a legal gray area, right? because you're probably not supposed to, but you could also just kind of, like I used to do at Daniel Bagley Elementary School in the lunch line, just kind of skirt the official line and just go right over to where the square pizza was and kind of take that back to my little, like, I think you can get into a Costco and you can get over to the food court without too much verification.
You're going to the return counter that's there. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go by the guardian that's checking the ID.
Right.
You go the opposite barn door to get in, and then you can go straight to the hot dogs there.
Man.
Well, that stops here and it stops now, according to Costco.
I have to say, I didn't grow up in a Costco family, and I've never had a Costco membership. So
Why did I see you at the Costco eating the other day?
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Busted.
Yeah. I just don't get the fanfare. We actually ran a headline in the Needling about the Soto Costco, adding a second gas station for everyone running out of gas, circling that parking lot.
The Costco.
And I went there for the first time just to get a photo of the actual parking lot. And I'm like, this is insane.
I don't understand that either.
Yeah,
I've had friends that save one. They would drive across town to save that penny. I'm like, that's, you're going 20 miles to save a penny. I don't get it.
And then another just in the parking lot. Yeah.
But on the why don't they just charge more for people who don't have a card? That way they could subsidize those of us with a card. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Keep the prices low. And just say, look, 50-cent surcharge if you don't have a card for this hot dog or whatever. It would still be super cheap. What is it, $1.99 for a hot dog and a drink?
$1.50, I think, famously, right? Is that? Or do
that
I?
$1.50. Right.
Yeah. And that's, that's one of those lost leaders that I also was in this article that we were using to prepare for this. It said something like their membership, Costco's membership, is up in the last year. Like they're growing by leaps and bounds. It seems like a weird place to draw the line because the halo effect of this cheap hot dog and soda is like so much like
goodwill.
Let's imagine that somebody who isn't a Costco member wants to come hang out in your store and eat a hot dog that you don't make any money on, and then just look around and see all of the majesty of this place. Like, isn't that what people, companies pay for?
Yeah, it's
like
marketing.
Brand awareness?
Yeah, but marketing.
You're going to be bringing in the riffraff there, Luke. Yeah, I mean, if you're an exclusive club member.
Somebody said, right?
Anybody can
come
in.
The line is shorter at the Costco's that are enforcing this. I will tell you this. My girlfriend is a Costco member and took me there recently, the one down in the greater Portland area. I was trying to return a vacuum cleaner, Dyson.
Was it? How many years?
The problem ultimately was I didn't have all the attachments, which we found out was a real issue. Yeah. It was one of the larger emotional breakdowns I've had just trying to navigate the Costco parking lot.
Yeah.
The idea that somebody would go through that in order to get the hot dog, it just, the mind reels, and I feel like, let them have it.
Yeah, it's like a brand addiction to me. Like, I don't get this. This doesn't seem worth it.
If I'm already there, I love it because I can stop and grab hot dogs for the kids. But if I'm not there, I'm with you. I don't understand. I look at that. And it's like somebody saying, "Hey, you want to just drive through Seattle in rush hour and I-5 for no purpose whatsoever, and then take 405 home?"
You know?
It's like, why?
All right, Costco, you heard it. Maybe they'll take all of your opinions into account. We're heading toward the end of the show. I just want to fit in some stuff that we haven't gotten a chance to mention that happened this week. Comment if you like. The Mariners began their new season last night against the Red Sox, and the M's went into this game with a goal of only losing by one run. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, they damn near pulled it off. A couple of breaks here and there, you got yourself a one-run defeat. And as a longtime Mariners fan, I mean, I will take a two-run loss any day. Thank you. That's a win.
I was so close to driving to wherever the corporate headquarters of Comcast are last night and talking to somebody. I don't care if it's the overnight security guard. I'm one of those people that, like, has Xfinity and that had to move to the, like, higher tier package to get Root Sports. Mm-hmm. And what Xfinity could have never known was coming was that at about 7 p.m. on the first real baseball game for the Mariners of the season, there might be a lot of people like me realizing we didn't have the right level of Xfinity service. And we might be on the website trying to up to the next level. And the website was crashing. And I hope that's not a metaphor for the season, but it was so infuriating. I was willing to give these robber barons more of my money, and they didn't even have the wherewithal to accept it because they hadn't thought this through enough.
They want you to wait. It's exercising power, just saying.
It was, honestly, I felt impotent and not in a good way.
We got what you want. Now you're going to wait for it.
It is ridiculously hard to watch those games.
You know what worked? A friend of mine, who shall remain nameless, sent me a link to an illegal streaming site.
That's the way.
Like a charm. And I make no apologies.
That is some Costco-esque membership sharing.
They're asking for it.
Really?
Because, I mean, there have been times where, like, I've signed up for, like, three different subscriptions. I'm like, I want to watch this game. Mm-hmm. And it's not the right thing. It's not in your area. And I'm like, my God.
You're driving me to violate the law right now. I can't help for it.
I'm just jealous of both of you who have the time to watch a baseball game. I'm like,
every now
that's
and
like
then.
A dream, you know, not to watch the game, but just
spoken
have the
like
time.
A dad of four.
I just need to watch to make the right joke at the meeting. That's all.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, we were talking about the Seattle City Attorney. That office used a social media star's own videos this week to charge the guy with reckless driving, which Luke, you had strong feelings about.
Not all heroes wear capes, Bill, and whichever Seattle Police Department officer heard this. Hellcat.
The Belltown Hellcat.
This muscle car revving its way through, I think it was like Pioneer Square or something, or Belltown, and heard it and said, I know what that sound is, because there had been, I saw like 100 or so complaints called in about this car that's super loud and I think had been modified, appears to have been modified to be even louder, driving around in populated areas late at night just for, as they say, the gram. Just for the person to get attention on Instagram. I, as somebody who reacts really, really poorly to like loud cars and loud motorcycles, particularly when I'm not expecting it, I the only thing I dislike more than this kid driving this car is Xfinity trying to make me pay more for the Mariners. So I have two people on my list this week.
But didn't would your young self have appreciated
I had a 1980 Honda Civic. Uh-huh. That thing wouldn't go 80 miles if you dropped it out of a plane. I even the young version of me didn't ever go in for that kind of loud muscle car revving. But maybe that's just me.
I always wondered why people do that. What is their obsession with it? Because he does that Instagram. It's like, it's 2 a.m. and I'm revving it up.
Yeah.
Oh, well, congratulations to you.
Yeah. Some psychological high off of knowing you just annoyed hundreds of people. I don't get it.
Well, the kicker was he apparently told police, I'm not going to stop doing this. I got 700,000 followers.
I hope he says that in court when he's showing up there. That'll go over.
Yeah, you want to throw the book at somebody, Seattle City Council. I know this isn't technically their category, but like this is a person who I would like to see really reconsidering their choices.
Have you guys checked out his Instagram account?
Yes, I have.
Yes.
And it's still up. They like haven't taken it down even though he's breaking the
law.
Well,
you know, this is only allegations at this point.
Uh-huh.
True.
So.
Okay, listen, we're at the end of the show, and I always want to set aside a little room for anything that made us smile, because the news doesn't always do that. Anything smile-worthy this week before we go?
My daughter picked her first flowers. She's three, and so she went outside to pick some flowers, and she brought them back to me. And she
neighbor's
said,
yard?
She says, well, it was the neighbor's yard, but it was okay, because it was dandelions, you know, little daisies and stuff. And she brings them back with a handful of rocks, and I said, oh, you got some flowers and rocks there. It's very nice. And she goes, no, I have beautiful flowers and beautiful rocks. You know. And there's nothing better than looking at the world through a three-year-old's
eyes.
See,
who needs to watch baseball when you got all that?
Exactly.
Right. The Mariners are beautiful rocks.
Unfortunately.
Anything else?
You know what? I'm just going to keep on smiling about the Boeing CEO signing off, because it's like I just hope that builds and creates some kind of, you know, accountability. See, I'm a downer. I just pay attention to bad news all the time.
Your headline made me smile, though, because that Boeing headline was nothing but gold.
That's
that was funny.
Very that good. Was beautiful.
I'm smiling thinking about the warmth of friends and family and listeners showing up at Town Hall tonight or LiveWire at 7:30. I can't get the smile off my face.
LiveWire Radio tonight. That's
tips accepted.
Friday night. Tonight, if you're listening live, get your tickets at kuow.org/events and enjoy Too Beautiful to Live, as I know you do.
Mm-hmm.
I will just commend you to a story on KUOW's website. Reporter Diana Opong spoke to someone who owed a bunch of money for going to the ER without insurance. And maybe you knew this, but so I know that hospitals will they'll give up trying to collect debt sometimes, right? And they'll just they'll sell their debt cheap to a collection company, and that company hopes to collect enough to make it worth it. There's a nonprofit that will buy the debt.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheap for them, right? And then they'll just let the person off the hook and send them a letter saying, you don't owe anything to the hospital. It's so simple and elegant, and a nice story at kuow.org from Diana Opong. And I think we covered it. We got to go. The needling is, what did you say, Seattle's only real fake news?
Real fake news. Mm. And I will say the thing I'm smiling about is thinking about all the jokes other people are going to be making on Monday for April Fool's Day. It's everyone else's turn to make jokes.
Right. You think it's so easy?
Yeah, yeah.
You do it.
Yeah.
That's Lex Vaughn from The Needling. Washington Policy Center Communications Director David Bose. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Rocks and flowers, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Burbank, LiveWire, TBTL. Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you, Billy.
Yeah. And we've got Kevin Kniestedt here producing the show. We've got Bernard Ouellette running the board, making it sound good. And we have you come on back. Let's do this again a week from now on Week in Review.